Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of Critical Issues, where we talk about the issues that affect our daily lives. Today's subject is the importance of meeting your emotional needs. You know, the human being has many parts to being a human. You know, it's not just a one-sided story, but the emotional part, the emotional need is a very important part of the human being. So we're going to be talking about the importance of meeting your emotional need. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal Rashid.
Wa alaikum assalam, Brother Henry. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa tuhu la sharika la wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. Brothers and sisters in the American Muslim 360 Block Radio listening audience, we greet you to greetings of peace of Assalamu Alaikum. You know, right now, people are feeling. How do you feel? And when did this start? It started from birth. We know as babies. babies will let the parents or caretaker know that they are comfortable or uncomfortable. It's a natural inclination to want to feel good, comfortable. And if the baby is not feeling comfortable, they generally let us know by crying, whatever language they have been created into you to alert the parent that I'm not feeling good. I want to be comforted. And so crying is a general signal that something needs to be done. But as we grow and develop, those same urges or passions or inclinations or impulses remain throughout our entire lifespan on this earth of wanting to feel comfortable, or else whatever means, ways and means, we will try to alert someone, I'm not feeling good. And we look at our biological body makeup. We know that information comes to our mind through one or more of our five senses. The feelings happen to be one of those senses that bring information, which are words, which are messages. They say words make people. And so our feelings bring messages into our mind. And notice that the other four four senses are located in the head. Our ears, our eyes, our taste, our nose smell. And the biggest sense is located everywhere. Our body comprises all over the body, inside as well as outside, we can feel mostly any discomfort. We generally feel it. And so the slightest discomfort, our sense of feel generally can pick it up. That I have a pain in my shoulder. I have something happening in my stomach. My toe is hurting. Or I have a headache. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so our sense of feel is all over the place. And again, the general salutation or greeting is peace, is what we desire. Peace be with you. How are you doing? I'm fine, is the general consensus of a reply when asked, how are you? How have you been doing? How is your family? I haven't seen you in a while. You've been doing good? Are you okay? Is there anything I can do? And so people naturally want to address how a person is feeling it is no accident that the field is very gigantic compared to, but they all are important. But the field covers a bigger territory, not only physically, but mentally, that we call emotions, and spiritual, my spirit is not what I want it to be. I don't feel energetic. I have no energy when it comes to carrying out basic obligations. And so you can see that this field can be biological or physical, but also resonates to the mental, or what we call the spirit of being encouraged, carry out any obligations, whether we want to or not. We're still compelled to want to achieve various degrees of satisfaction, or what we may say, victory. And so these needs are natural. And we have obligations as social creatures to meet each other's emotional needs properly. We have to know these needs just like we know our name. A person is really at a disadvantage if they don't even know how to name what are emotional needs. And so just in case you don't know them, I'm going to name a few so you can memorize it and know it and begin to know how to apply it. But we all want affection. We all want attention. We have this component that's called self-worth. We want to have a sense of self-worth where we want to feel acknowledged as far as compliments. We don't like it when people ignore our feelings and make us feel bad or not a part of the group. And so we have a sense of belonging. We want to be a part of a group as social creatures. That group normally is the family. Family can be defined in many directions. You have a biological family. You have a community family. You have various family that you may be affiliated based on your interests and your values. And so you may be in a club or fraternity or sorority or another specific group that you are affiliated with. Some people ride motorcycles. They consider themselves the motorcycle club. And so there are a lot of group matters that are created on common interests that people want to be associated with or a part of. We all want recognition, which is the same thing as attention. Want to be recognized as worthy of some sort of achievement. Now we know that, and since everything in creation is dualistic, if these needs are not met properly, that's why people like flowers and gifts and kind words. If they're not met properly, then people still seek them. Now it's improper. A good example is belonging to a group. If there's no biological family or caring, compassionate, empathetic family, the person still wants to be affiliated with a group. And so many times people are attracted into undesirable groups or groups that are negative or detrimental. Or it could be one person, relationship, a one-on-one relationship that people call love. So the group don't have to be numbers of people. It can be just one other individual. Or it could be any creation, an animal. People have a lot of affection for animals or some other created creature to comfort them as far as their feelings. And so you see, this is a big matter, a big issue, a big concern that we cannot ignore or omit, right? Like it doesn't exist, because these operations exist whether we want to be a part of it or not. Can't close the door. Emotions can be very helpful or beneficial to obtain and maintain progress, whatever confrontations one may encounter. One can use their emotions positively to defeat whatever confrontation that they may be headed towards or involved in currently involved in. But in contrast, our emotions can be detrimental if not used properly. And so there's no time out or ignore it or act like it doesn't exist. It would, in essence, go to an unnatural inclination. That it becomes, again, negative. So if you can't find satisfaction, positive group or a person, then you may find that desired satisfaction in a negative person. That's why people say you got hooked up with the wrong person. That person doesn't mean you any good. This is a one-on-one relationship that somebody determines that this one person is not good for you. Is a bad, he or she is a bad influence on you making bad decisions. So a lot of people got in trouble, big trouble, because of a negative influencer that they got associated with. And so we call that a weak mind got influenced by a negative peer. And so we make mistakes. Some of us learn from our mistakes and safely get out of it before any serious harm will resonate from it. And unfortunately, some people don't learn from a bad decision and have made a bad choice based on these emotional needs. You can tell pretty much a person's mindset by looking at how they dress. Immediately, you can make an assumption based on a person's dress. For example, somebody that's dressing with tight clothes on reveals a lot about them, that they are seeking attention. They're seeking some sense of love or associated with what you call love. But they are seeking it through their dress. So that's our topic. I hope that you have some kind of comment then you can make towards this topic or question. Emotional intelligence, emotional desires, give us an illustration of something that you are experiencing or have experienced or know of that you may be able to help someone who may be involved in a bad situation based on the misuse of their emotions. So, Brother Henry, I'm going to stop at this time. If you have a question or comment or a PSA, feel free to do so.
I'm going to go to a PSA, and as you say, we invite our listeners that if you do have a question or comment, just press 1 on your phone, and we're going to be right back, and we'll bring you into the queue on the other side. That is, if they don't touch that dial, we'll be back in a while.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
All right, we are back with Critical Issues, where we're talking about the subject today, the importance of feeling your emotional needs. And as we said, we started the program, Dr. Rashid, is that emotion is a natural part of the human being. And the thing I guess we have to highlight is that when we have too much emotion, the opposite is when we don't have enough emotion. I remember Imam Muhammad was saying once that we have to be duly proportioned. We have to have the right amount of emotion and the right amount of knowledge, because those two things go into equally into it. You know, if you're giving a speech, you have knowledge and you're speaking on the speak that you're doing, but you have no emotional. People just say, "Yeah, he was just dead. He showed no emotions in it." And then sometimes we run into people who show too much emotion, that you can't understand or get really what they are trying to tell you, because they are just over-emotional or over-excited in a lot of cases, or sometimes distressed or whatever, and they can't express the knowledge that they're trying to get about, that the emotion is bringing about. But it is a very important part there to have emotion there. And like you were saying, that emotion is love, is joy. Those are the happy things. But it's also hate and sadness that comes about the human being. And usually it's different circumstances of knowledge that come into the mind and heart that causes these emotions to be. We've seen people have tears of laughter, and we've seen people have tears of joy, and then we see people who have the tears of sadness. And these usually express some emotional need that's going on in the human life. But we should be excited about being a human being, and we should be excited about having life. You know, if I tell people all the time, if you are listening to our voice, if you are here, if you are able to be here on the earth today, if you woke up this morning, then you do have something to be excited about. But, you know, some people, that because I guess the circumstances, I call naturally negative. Look like everything that comes out their mouth, even when they're making a positive statement, it comes out negatively. And that's an emotion, because the knowledge they may be speaking may be the right knowledge, but the way that they speak it, it turns you against the knowledge because of their negative emotion. So emotions do play a important part in the human being, especially in our communication skills, and whether that verbal, whether that's because there's many ways that we communicate. You can be saying, as we said, the words, the knowledge verbally, but when people are watching your emotion in it, that will change the situation of how they look at what you are saying there. So it is very important there, and we do have to understand our emotion, and don't let emotion rule. It shouldn't be the ruler. So we shouldn't be so emotional that we can't get the knowledge that we want to express out. You know, some people say love, that's an emotion. But all of these emotions should be based on knowledge. And if we're going to get the true emotion, then it has to be based on the correct knowledge. So we have to keep those things in mind. Don't let a sadness come about because you don't understand the knowledge. Don't let feelings just overrule or just rule you without having some knowledge in that area that you're feeling sad in there. So I wanted to add that to it there. And again, we say to our listeners, if you do have a question or comment, you may press 1 on your phone, and we will bring you into the queue where we are talking about this subject of emotion, meeting your emotional needs. So we do have a couple of callers into the queue, Dr. Rashid. So we're going to bring our first caller in. We have area code 914-434. I believe this is our brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program, and state your name and where you're calling from.
Wa alaikum assalam. Yeah, this is Muhammad Sharif calling from small town of Mount Vernon, New York.
All right.
Well, I say small town because it's about 4 by 4 miles. We got approximately 6,000 to 8,000 people here. You can go from one side, east side or west side, Fallstown, during the so-called rush hour in about 15 minutes.
Wow.
So that's why I said it's a small place with all these people, 6,000 to 8,000 people in this small 4 by 4. But anyway, the subject this morning, emotional. Emotional ignorance, emotional intelligence, and you can have, as you were saying, Henry, that you can have something positive, but the way you say it, it may turn out as a negative. That's really mm-hmm. something to think about, you know. Positive and where you come out of your mouth or what, it's a negative. I mean, that takes a lot of knowledge to control that. Well, I guess I'll leave that. This is, I call this Powerful Thursday. You have to be thinking. On Thursdays, on EMT6, in this program from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Get you thinking. Now, one thing, I don't know if you or Dr. Maher was on the Faith Sunday, Mosque Cares Faith Sunday this past week.
Uh-huh. I missed it. I said I missed it. You're going to have to tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. They had a presenter. He came on, and he was well prepared. Imam Salim Manan. And he spoke about Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, just a lot of our leaders of the past. You see how wise they were. He spoke of Elijah Muhammad. He took us in the area of business. He spoke about Salam Nutrition. Then he spoke also on CPC, Collective Purchasing Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a conversation going on between Imam Wari B. Muhammad II and Imam Salim. And that being that little back and forth he was having, very positive. And Imam Wari B. Muhammad said, he said, well, CPC, I'm not sure this is what he said, but anyway, it's recorded. And the replay is at the mosque is the first Sunday, March 12, 2023. And that may bring it up on your browser or it's maybe on YouTube or Facebook. But anyway, you'll be able to bring it up here to come for yourself. So after they were speaking, Imam Wari B. Muhammad second, he said, you know what, CPC, I don't know what he said, it's not dead, it's alive, we can bring it, or whatever. But anyway, he said, all we need is just 500 people with $2,000. That's $1 million. He said that. Mm-hmm. I had never thought of this way. I guess maybe others hadn't thought of this, how much money that is. Only 500 mm-hmm. people with $2,000, that's $1 million. He said, we can do that. Anyone that's got $2,000, people come together. You could do raise $1 million a day.
Think
people $2,000 in their bank account or have it. Some people maybe just have it on them or in their checking account, wherever, or go to the bank and get $2,000, 500 people, that's $1 million. You start putting that word out there and people come. You can have a rate coming with $1 million a day just getting started. So, I mean, we got so much money right at our fingertips. So I just thought I would bring this to the, I've been saying I was going to make this talk to everybody as soon. Everybody could, all the Block Talk Radio, the host, and everybody. Not saying what's going to do to money, anything, but just the thought of $1 million on the 500 people.
You know, Muhammad, we're going to have to do a program on, I guess you would say, investing or pooling resources and how together we can have strength. But when we are, even though you may have resources, if they're not pooled together to give meaning to them, then they become meaningless. And then I think the other thing when it comes to investing, because, you know, most of us now, and this is good also, you know, we may have investments, even in retirements and all of this thing, to really know how money works. You know, they keep so many of the masses of the people in such a distressful state all the time, which is emotion too. That we don't take the time to think or to think our way out of the situation. We just react to the situation with emotion without any knowledge or even seeking the advice of someone that may have the knowledge on how to get us out of there. So that is a very important subject, and we're going to have to do a talk on that, inshallah, maybe very soon there. Because economics does affect us, and we should be getting excited about doing business with each other. You know, life is up and down, and I'm going to go to this next call in just a minute, but I just want to say this. Life is up and life is down, but it's how we look at it. We're gonna have the ups and the downs, and because you have one down or have a down, that don't mean you should stop struggling or be excited even about what you're doing. At one time, I remember with the CPC, how excited we were about CPC. But yes, with any investments, because, you know, over the years, I've invested in different things, and some of them I lost that. But that wasn't the end of life. I didn't just take a negative attitude to say, hey, everything they do is just going to be bad, bad, and that idea of investing is bad. And I think some of us have fell into that trap, Muhammad. So we're going to definitely have to talk about that a lot more.
inshallah.
All right.
But okay, I appreciate you. Your call there. And that's one. And I think you keep on preaching it, keep on telling it, and keep the emotion up with telling it, because what you're telling is the truth. We got to learn how to pool our resources. And a little thing like 500 people with $2,000, the potential that could be, it could change the whole situation of those 500 people. So I do aware, and we appreciate you bringing that up to us. All right. We're going to go to our next caller here at area code 727-408. Welcome to the program. State your name and where you're calling from.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Bilal from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Assalamu alaikum,
Bilal. Alhamdulillah. This is something I'm reading from what Imam Muhammad says. I never heard him say this. The words of this let me know it's supposed to be a certain way as far as the emotion is concerned. So I'm going to read it. I'm not going to read the whole of it. I'm just going to read some of it. And then... But I'm not. I can't get as loud as I would want to wake people up in this house. But let me read it to you. Faith reward is understanding. Faith rewards you, and reward is understanding. The church people used to say, "You will understand it better by and by." There are people who believe in God strongly, and they believe that God is going to clear up everything. He didn't create us to leave us with burdens, a lot of questions, and a lot on our minds that we don't understand. God created the human being with a mind to understand everything necessary to human life. God had produced me with a brain that will understand him if I don't understand him now. I understand him better by and by. I understand him so well until I really believe that if there was no way out, we didn't have any hope anymore. The leaders of this world are finished. The people, there's no hope. And if God made me see things that way, God knows that I would take up a mission, take on a work, and I would challenge the world. And I know the world wouldn't be able to defeat me. God would bring the whole world down if I really rain out against it. I'm not going out against it unless I know that is what. But if I must do it, I know I will be successful and bring the whole world down. So praise be to Allah. This is Imam Walter D. Muhammad on the original man. And that I can read that. In fact, I'm going to read that every day. That has a spirit in it.
That
just want to keep me motivated, but it'll keep me elevated on a road to strong faith and trust and total trust, faith and trust in Allah, and it would change everything. It would change me and everything around me. Inshallah, that's what I'm gonna
do. Right. Assalamualaikum.
Assalam.
I think that we have to become excited, because that's the emotion too about what we're doing. Even in the bad times, we got to be able to have faith in a way out, even if it looks like there's no way out. And I'm sure many times we've been in conversations here where it looked like it was no way out of what we were doing, and Allah blessed us with a good solution to that before we may not have had. And we got to become enthusiastic again by what we are doing. So this emotion that we're saying is very important. It plays a very important part, because knowledge without the emotion is called dead knowledge, because emotion gives life to that knowledge that you have. And when you become excited about something, and people understand what you become excited about, they tend to get excited. They, as they say, it rubs off on you. So I agree. There are things we need to, especially as the members of a community, that we need to get excited about, not over excited where people just think we just emotions without any knowledge, but the plans and, that we come up with. As Muhammad said, to look at things like investment, the potential of what an investment could do for you, and also not leaving out the risk that's in it. When you got knowledge of those things, you'll be surprised. There are people every day that have benefited from those type of activities that do it. So we just got to become excited about life. And as I said earlier in the program, that if we woke up this morning, then we should have something to become excited about. But now we just going to complain about the aches and the pains. And, I know some of us, we do have these little aches and the pain. But if that's going to carry us throughout the day, then as emotion is going to probably be negative emotion. And probably, even though you may affect the people around you, it's not going to be good for them. So we need to study this emotion. And we need to see how we can better benefit it and see how we can come together and use these things to benefit us as a part. Thank you very much, Bilal, for that of some of the statements that Imam Muhammad said. And we've seen him in these areas sometimes, and he's talking, He get excited about what he's talking about, and you see how the excitement goes throughout the room. Look like everybody in the room get excited too, and you hear say, people say, "Teach you, ma'am." All praises due to God. Those are that excitement from that emotional knowledge that is being given. But we don't have any other callers at this time. Dr. Jamal, so turn it back over. Dr. Jamal? Okay, hold on. Let's see. Dr.
I'm here.
Jamal?
I'm here.
Look like I had taken you off. I sound like you.
Well, they must not yet close my mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, in concluding, it was brought out that, our emotions, if it can be our worst enemy and we are not aware. A person can be good, have good information, like a parent, but you talk down to their children. And the words on, they say it's not what you say, but how you say it. That resonates into an ambush that a person has good intentions and have good information. But how they say it, they ambush their own agenda of trying to reach a person in a positive way. And so we have to be more conscious of how we are delivering a message to another person. Many relationships fall apart because of bitter language, especially when emotions are heated. Anger is in the atmosphere, or resentment. And so there are times where we shouldn't be engaged in conversation, especially if we know that our emotions are out of control. Our tongue, as they say, can be our worst enemy. And so I hope that we can grow from our information that we have shared just morning. And to realize how important our emotions are, how it can help us or cause us self-defeat, especially the latter, the self-defeat without our actual intent. We can say something that can destroy a relationship for a long time, if not forever, by a few words that were ill-advised, not wise to say what we said. So it doesn't take a lot. Any negative words, profanity, you know, profanity gets people's attention. But is that our desire, just to get someone's attention when you have killed a relationship? Or regardless of what that relationship is, a parent, student, I mean a parent, child, or a teacher, student, or romantic, or even platonic relationship. Choices of words and how we say it is very, very important.
Yes, and I think it's this kind of information is very important, and we have to. Maybe we have to continue this subject on emotion and how our emotion can take us into some good things if we use it in the proper way here. But we're going to get ready to close out here, and we appreciate our callers and all of our listeners there. And do tell your friends and family about it. Say tune in to AM 360, especially on Thursday morning. And we will be back here next week for another edition of Solutions to Critical Issues. Next program will be Brother Adam B.I., and his subject today is the growing popularity of the 1619 Project. That should be an interesting talk, so stay tuned, and we'll see you next week. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Allah Barakatuh. This is Adam B.I. here on Mighty Sense on AM 360 this Thursday morning, March the 16th. I want to welcome all of you to our program today, and we're going to get right to it. As Brother Henry had mentioned, we have our topic today is the growing popularity of the 1619 Project. And what got me, I guess, interested in this, I know you probably heard of 1619 and a series of series of articles by the New York Times, and which really caused the uproar, brought to the forefront the idea of critical race theory. And we see a lot of the right-wing people around the country rail against critical race theory. We see an interest in what type of curriculum books are being introduced to children in the public schools. And so it's causing an uproar. But one thing that got me interested in, I guess in the last couple of weeks here in Fayetteville, that a couple of churches have reading groups reading about the 1619 Project. And I thought that was interesting. Very interesting. As a matter of fact, my assistant at my office told me that the church she attends, every Tuesday night, they have a reading club on the 1619 Project. And she told me her grandson, who was like, I guess he's about 6 or 7 years old, he's reading the 1619 Project. As a matter of fact, he went to school, and he told his teacher that he was reading the 1619 Project. And his teacher was so concerned, the teacher called his mother, to confirm that. So I guess she really is intimidated because she got to get on her game now. Because he has a student that she teaches every day that can fact check her. That's something we couldn't do when I was in school. We had nobody to fact check the stuff they were telling us. Right? And they would tell us any old thing in school. They gave us all these sayings that in the discovery of our country and things of our nature, we learned about Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry became famous for a saying, and he said, give me liberty or give me death. And he became famous, so famous that we learned about that in school. He was a patriot. He was a national hero. All the while, we had many of our ancestors on plantations, and if one of them had said that, he wouldn't have been hung. He would have been hung up and tortured, maybe tarred and feathered, maybe had a feet and a hands cut off. They said, we gotta kill that. We don't want that to affect our slaves. Because if anybody in America needed liberty, it was the hundreds of thousands of slaves that worked for free and lived an existence maybe on par with the animals of the plantation. So anyway, I've been, I guess, in the last 2 weeks, I bought the audio book, The 1619 Project. And it's probably around 15 hours, might be more than that. And I do audio books because when I'm driving, I listen to the audio book. Or if I take a break, I listen to some of the audiobook. And it's very interesting. I would recommend everybody get that maybe after Ramadan when you have, I mean, because I'm going to take a hiatus during Ramadan because I got a better book to listen to. But still, 1619 Project. And it's causing a lot of controversy. I mean, if you Google 1619 Project, you'll find as many anti-1619 projects railing against this, telling everybody it's full of errors. And one scholar that he said he disagreed with it because he did a fact check on the 1619 Project. And he wrote an article about the fact that were not accurate. He said he listened to the stunned silence, as he writes. And he was appalled. He was messed up that she intimated that the Patriots fought the American Revolution in large part to preserve slavery in North America. So we can't consider that as an option. Because when they come to, when they taught us, and y'all might have gone to a woke school and y'all learned something different, but here's what I learned. Because they came up with a nice, catchy phrase. No taxation without representation. Y'all remember that? Well, who in America was taxed without representation? How many years did we as a people get taxed yet had no representation? And I'm not talking about 1700s or the early 1800s. We couldn't hold office. Other than that brief moment of Reconstruction, as they call it, where after the South lost the war, that the Northern Army allowed the freed slaves to run for office. Right? During that brief period that they allowed that to happen. I remember Man Muhammad said, in describing that period, he said, after them doing that, then the Northern Army left and went back north and left the freed African Americans, freed, left them in charge. Now, you know and I know that back then, the Southern Caucasian didn't want to have African Americans in charge politically. Heck, they don't want it today. They're trying to pass laws today to get rid of African Americans in charge. Constitutionally, they're trying to do it. Their forefathers didn't want it, and hey, they don't want it either. They want to take us back to be taxed, but have no representation. And that was the main thing they were, according to history that I was taught, that was the main thing that the British were doing to the colonists. And so when we study about the Revolution, we study about the Boston Tea Party. We said we'd rather throw this tea into the Boston Harbor than to pay tax on it. and they told that story. They made TV shows on that story, right? To give us an idea that it was all about the tea. And it was all about the tea if you consider that the tea has sugar in it. So I'm going to play this brief clip. It's about 3 or 4 minutes from chapter 3 of the 1619 Project. It's about sugar, the white gold. Sugar being the white gold. Let me change that. I thought I was gonna play it, but it's not working right. But anyway, let me tell you what happened. Let me talk about it. Sugar was a big business annually, and it still is a big business annually. In Louisiana alone, because back in the during the slavery days in Louisiana, in 1854, Louisiana produced 600, and this is just from the numbers, 675 million pounds of sugar. And they did it, here's the way I got it, I calculated it. Y'all follow my calculation now. It said that they produced 450,000 hogsheads in sugar. So I said, what the heck is hogsheads, right? And it's a term that derived from the 15th century English called Hodges Heady, which refers to a unit of measurement equivalent to, if it was in sugar, because they use that term to measure tobacco, liquor, beer, flour, molasses, and other products. But they estimate that each hogshead represents from 800 to 1,500 pounds of product, right? And it's shaped like a barrel, but I'm not sure why they came up with that term. So Louisiana in 1854 produced 450,000 hogshead of sugar. Add 1,500 pounds per hogshead to be 675 million pounds. Now, just think of that. Back in 1854, the price of sugar was 10 cents a pound. So that means just on sugar, Louisiana had an economy in 1854 of $67,500,000. Right? Just in that time. So that was big money. $67,500,000 in 1854 is big money. And if you backdate that up to 1823, right, at that time it was 30,000 hogsheads, which was probably equal to $6 million. And in 1823, $6 million was a lot of money. It was wealth creation type money, right? So if you look at the American Revolution, when America won its freedom from the British, and that revolution occurred because Well, according to the history we were given, no taxation without representation, right? They didn't want to pay the taxes and not have a right to what's going on, which is reasonable, right? But back in that day, when the British was trying to defend himself and keep his colonies in existence, because why? The colonies represented big money for Britain. The products that were designed was created here in America, in the new land, represented about 15 to 20% of Britain's economy. That's a lot of money. So they weren't going to let the colonists walk away with that. So during the period leading up to the American Revolution, the British said, well, we're going to make slavery illegal in the colonies. We're going to make slavery illegal. In other words, we're going to cut off the hands of the colonists because we're going to take their free labor, and we're going to make it illegal, which would impact how much product they can produce, right? And then they did something else. Then they spread the word in the colonies that to you slaves, if you come and join us, we're going to free you. It was only a strategy of war. It had nothing to do with the British having a soul moment or a conscience, because in the British colonies that were not in America, they still had slaves, and they still participated in the slave trade. So don't get too happy on the British, because they were hypocritical as all get out. So for this guy that's writing this rebuttal to the 1619 Project, saying he disagreed with the author of that, Nicole Hannah Jones is a reporter for the New York Times that headed up the project. He disagreed with her because he didn't agree that the Patriots fought the American Revolution in large part to preserve slavery in North America. Well, because that doesn't bode well to the narrative that we've been fed from day one. And that might not have been the initial reason for the conflict, but when word spread that the British were going to free our free labor, the ranks of the American, or the newfound country, America, was Americans grew up to defend the country. As long as it was just tea, they didn't get all up in arms. But when you're talking about freeing our free labor, oh, no, we got to fight now. It's on. So she wasn't wrong in drawing that conclusion. But see, you got to understand, when you draw conclusions like that, it upsets the narrative. And the narrative we've been fed over the years in America has been pretty tame, and it served its purpose. But now someone wants to create another narrative that we can't control. And they don't know how the descendants of the slaves are going to react. See, most of the things that conflict in America, because the Caucasian think we will react the way they reacted. we would do what they would do. But we have largely not proven to be like that. There is no big movement in America. That give me liberty or give me death. There's been no big movement amongst us to give me liberty or give me death. But the reaction that we've gotten over here is that as though there is a big movement, so any hint of that mentality arising, then the innocent Africans here get the brunt of the reaction. Lynching, murder, getting locked up. Barbaric treatment, and I call it barbaric treatment, that we have gotten in America is because of that. But if you talk like that, no, we can't have that. That's critical race theory. They're using critical race theory when they talk like that. They might start rebelling, and we don't know how to. If they do that, we have no way of controlling it. So as I said, I'm glad this dialogue is taking place. And I'm glad people are reading about it. Because we know, those of us, we know that a lot of the information we were given about America was not as innocent as they portray it. We know that. But they want us to believe that it's all innocent. It's all innocent. Look, if you want to make a comment, press 1. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what should be our role as Muslims in the national dialogue, in the national dialogue. Money Sense will return after this message.
With Allah's name, most merciful benefactor, most merciful redeemer, we are grateful to announce that during the month of Ramadan, here on American Muslim 360, yours truly, Kareem Hamid and Michael Hameen, shall share the Ramadan sessions of Imam Warithuddin Muhammad, Sunday evenings from 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time, here on American Muslim 360 Radio. We look forward to your presence pre-Ramadan Mubarak. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, we're back. This is Adam Diar, your host of Money Sense here on AM360. And we're talking about the repercussions of the 1619 Project and the growing popularity that it has attracted, especially in the African-American community. And get your ideas and thoughts of what you think about that happening. So let's go to the phone lines. We do have a caller. Area code 213-925. 213-925. How's it going?
Wa alaikum as-salam. Can you hear me, brother?
Barely, but... Yeah, I can hear you, but barely.
Let me adjust this here. For one thing, yeah. Oh, can you hear me just a little better here now?
Much better, yes, sir.
Okay, all right. This is Amin with Sister Claire Muhammad's STEMschool.com. I'm thinking this, you know, it's always, the bottom line is money. And more more and more city councils and more municipalities and everything is recognizing the reparations movement. I just read an article yesterday about in San Francisco, somebody, one of the politicians or something, proposed giving African Americans $5 million each $5 million. This is on CNN. This is on CNN reported this. You know, so the reparations movement is growing, and by them enacting this critical race theory, what they're doing is they're trying to blot out history. In other words, in order to blot out the case for reparations, you see what I mean? And we know a whole lot of southern states have enacted this critical race theory type thing where, you know, the teachers are under scrutiny and textbooks is under scrutiny and all that, you know what I mean? Because I think what they're doing is they're trying to head off or blunt the reparations movement, money involved. I think the banks are involved. Jews in the slave trade is all that's involved. You know, what they're trying to do, listen, we can't keep talking about this because these African Americans are building a case. They're building a case, you know. So this is one of the other angles that I see so much opposition to the truth, you know, to the historical truth. I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Okay, my brother. Good point. Thank you very much, sir. And you're right. I mean, that's when you look at these numbers, and I was just mentioning Louisiana. You know, the sugar industry is right now. They say Louisiana, the sugarcane industry is worth $3 billion in Louisiana, estimated to employ 16,400 jobs. Create 16,400 jobs, right? And keep in mind that it's in America that Americans consume, the average American consumes 77.1 pounds of sugar a year. 77.1 pounds of sugar. That might be a good way to get people off of sugar. I'm gonna get a picture with 77.1 pounds of sugar, 77 1-pound bags of sugar, and stack it up. And so, this is how much sugar you eat per year. Maybe that might have an effect. I don't know. What do y'all think? Let's go to the phone lines. We do have a caller here. Area code 336-722. 336-722. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother man.
Yes, sir.
I was listening to your program.
How you doing, brother?
Pretty good, thanks, Stella. And you mentioned Patrick Henry, the man who said, give me liberty or give me death. My family came off the Henry Plantation. My great uncle, I had the chance to meet him. I'll be 85 years old in a couple of months, thanks a lot. His name was Urban David Henry.
I'm sorry, brother. I didn't mean to talk about your family.
No problem. But I've been listening to this race theory thing they got going. And I listened to different African Americans talking. I think this thing can be cleared up by us. You take, for instance, my family. Every 5 years, we have a family reunion. And these Henrys and Williams and Scipios, they gather in different parts of the country. And they run down the history of the white Patrick Henry family. There was a lot of slave mixing with white people. And the older Henrys are dying out now. But you can easily tell those that were living the last time I was at a reunion in Winsburg, South Carolina, were really, really, I would say, 60% white. Mm-hmm. So my point is this. When I came into Al-Islam, I didn't come into Al-Islam to learn how to pray. I came into Al-Islam because the way they were teaching it to me, we were going to create a revolution to get back to some of these white people. But that didn't happen. As I got into Islam, they started telling me about praying and Ramadan and all of that, which is fine. But my point is this.
Hey, Brother Irvin.
You what now?
Brother Irvin, you're breaking up badly. I think it's you.
I learned that 50% of my DNA was Caucasian.
Right.
And based on the history that I got from my family reunions, this came from the family, Henry's family side. But my point is, why is it that Caucasian people don't admit all this race mixing that took place during slavery? And that a great deal of us who call ourselves black or African American, that we are a mixed race of people. Why don't you just come right out and say it? What's the idea of trying to hide it?
I guess they're trying to hide it, and they're trying to keep people from finding out about it, and they're trying to keep as many African Americans blind as they can. And they're trying to memorialize it in the education system. In any effort to go against the national narrative of what was done to us, they try to discredit. You know, I mean, I encourage everybody to get the book. They have the visual part of it on Hulu. Look at the 1619 Project. I mean, they did to show you how bad, when you look at the laws that were passed, they did a study of 584 ex-slave women back in the day. 35% of them had been raped and had children by the slave master.
Yeah.
35%. Right? And 30-some% they said 35% were descendants of the slave master, and 35% of the ones that were alive had children from the slave master. So we all mixed up. We all mixed up.
Well, I'd like to make one more
statement. They don't even talk.
There are some people in my family, the lighter ones. I asked them, why don't you take the DNA test and just see? Some of them don't want to know. This is what I'm talking about my family. Some of them don't want to know, but I think everybody should know. Since the technology is here to tell you how much we are a mixed race of people, and we got another group of people who claim that they are pure, who are denying their own offspring the right to be truly free in this country.
Yeah. Got a lot of way to go. Irvin, I appreciate it, man. We got some callers. You created some controversy, which is good.
Okay.
Thanks very much, man. As-salamu alaykum. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Error code 636-980. 636-980. As-salamu alaykum.
Yes. Wa alaykum as-salam, Imam Adam Bia. Very important subject matter that you are sharing with us this morning. You know, the brother mentioned follow the money, you know, and I believe this is tied to the reparations movement. In the criminal justice system, as we speak, there is a function called restitution. Restitution. Although one is sentenced, then there is an addition of restitution. There's a certain amount of money that you must pay the victims of a crime that one is convicted of. So it's already on the books, restitution, and it is connected with the victim of crime. So, the more they try to hide the true history of this nation, the more it's coming out, the more controversy that is surrounding it, that aids in people's curiosity and the need to want to know, reality.
Mm-hmm.
So restitution is already in the criminal justice system, and it is in law. I'll stop right there, my brother. Thank you, ma'am, Adam B.
Yes. I'm good. Thank you very much, brother. You're right. All right. Area code 914-297. 914-297.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Adam, brother Yaki Abdul Ali, my friend in New York. I pray that you and your family as well.
I'm good. Doing good. Thank you, brother.
Thank
same on this
one. Thanks, Shukran, Jazakallah, Alhamdulillah. Excellent. Praise be to Allah. Good to hear your voice. And that was very interesting point that Brother Kareem just made, you know, very interesting. And anyways, getting back to what you mentioned about the, you wonder if it would work if you put up, if you showed a big picture of that, you know, 75 pounds worth of sugar. And that's what we ingest in a year's time, the average, you know, American. I don't want to say the human being, but average American, right? I think that's what you're referring to or said. I saw a picture of that. You know, I saw, I forget what it was. I think it might have been, it was years ago. I don't know if you remember this book. It was called Sugar Blues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever heard of it. But anyway, I think it might have been in that book. Yeah, it was called Sugar Blues. It's still on the it's an excellent book, and it explains and it goes through the whole thing about the sugar. And like you mentioned, like you did, which is very interesting, how you mentioned the monetary aspect of that. You know, I mean, you know, what that represents to people's in terms of their mindset. You know, I mean, forget about that. You know, the sugar. I won't say that it's bad for everyone, but that. And that in terms of that amount, it can't be good for the body. The body is no way in the world the body could, you know, accommodate that amount of sugar or amount of anything in over excess. Let alone it be bad for you in terms of, you know, how it, you know, it matriculates in the internal system. You know, it's like putting sugar in the gas tank of a car. It's the same concept. You know what I mean? It's going to eventually ruin it. You know. Anyway, I just thought that was very interesting, and I had to call you. You know, I concur that if you were to get a big picture of it and post that and put that up, I believe that you would, a lot of positive results could come from that. You would be helping a lot of people. Okay, you'd be like the prophet, peace be upon him, the most useful, the best of you, the most useful to the most people in that concept. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna just release myself from the line and tune back into the class. Appreciate you, my brother. Love you, man. And that 19 project was very, I like that, like, you know, that, you know, and if you, I can release that stuff in the line, but, you know, the critical race theory in terms, I didn't get the connection when brother was mentioning to him that he sees that they're using that as a means to discredit or hurt the you know the reformation of the or the institution of the reparation. That I didn't get that. That could you maybe explain that?
I will. I'll get back to that. Yep. Thank you, bro. All right. Good talk with you. Assalamu alaikum. All right, let's go to phone line 727-866. 727-866. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, I think
that's 724. But anyway, you said 727, but I said 724. But when I heard the 866, I figured it might be my number. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
As you were talking, I was thinking back. I have traced the history of my family, and I already knew that we were part Caucasian because my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, was Caucasian, and her family disowned her when she chose to marry my grandfather. But and that's growing up in Pennsylvania. On my mother's side, she's from North Carolina, and someone in our family traced it, and they got all the way back to slavery. They know how much it would be in the second generation, the generation that were slaves, how much they paid for each one of them. So there's very good records. They kept very good records that tell a story. So something like the 1619 Project, these young people are going and they're bringing out the stuff in those records, just like some of the young ones in our family did. So we have the history on both sides of our family. The one that I did with my grandfather, Martin Van Snowell, he was in the Civil War. I was able to chase five generations of our family in the military. But our grandfather, my great-grandfather, he got shot twice down in the South. And he went and treated him and everything. But he got some kind of money eventually from the military. But there's so much history where we have contributed to American history that we don't even have. We could just start calling it American history because our story's being told. And then I was reading around the time that I was researching our family, but there was a case fought by the NAACP from someone in the South, and I was looking for it. I couldn't find it right quick. But one of the ancestors of somebody that fought in the war where they promised 40 acres and a mule, through the NAACP, they won the case and found out that because of how the government was set up at that time, I think one of the military heads had the authority to make that ruling about the promise that, and they received back money for their ancestor not receiving the 40 acres and the mule. So that just all came to my mind. But now as an educator with sugar, I know they at one time they're saying throw all the white stuff out of your kitchen. So that would be salt, flour, sugar, all that bleach stuff. And I think if you would make a commercial or something to put it up where you need the brother that used to do it in the Final Call in the Muslim Journal to do all those pictures, because that one they did of the pig, you would never want to eat pork again. If you remember that picture that they put in there, that was put in there. Yeah, a cartoon or a picture like that would serve a lot. But even in present day, when they put out about how the sugar was making our children have ADHD and everything like that, and then they realized the effect that it would have, they pulled that back. They pulled that information back. But sugar, if we start reading labels again, sugar is in so much stuff, and now they've even sized it up to, you know, it's made in the corn syrup. The first four or five ingredients of most of our food is some form of sugar. So it's not only that white sugar, all those ending in O-S-E, E-S, I mean A-S-E and all that. So sugar has continued to be used to, really, it's like poison for our system. And people become educated about it and all because, according to the statistics that come out for the health of African Americans, we have the highest rate of diabetes. Diabetes.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much, sister. I got a couple of callers.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
thank you.
Waiting in. All right, let's go to the phone lines again. Error code 914-434.
Assalamu alaikum. Well, assalam. Yeah, this is Muhammad Sharif calling Mount Vernon, New York. I'm going to try to make it brief. I haven't read about the 1619 project.
I'll help you make it brief. No, go ahead.
Okay, good.
Okay. Go ahead, Muhammad.
So anyway,
go ahead, Muhammad.
Just speaking about just the idea, just a thought. Everything starts with a thought or idea, and then it starts being manifest. This past Faith Sunday, Moth Care's Faith Sunday program, Brother Presenter was speaking about, he spoke about Booker T. Washington and some of our leaders. Also spoke about CPC, the Salam Nutrition. And that conversation between him and Imam Wardeen Muhammad II, Imam Wardeen Muhammad said at the end of that brief conversation between the two, he said, oh, yeah, well, CPC, it's not dead. We can start again or something like that. But anyway, what bottom line was, he said only 500 people with $2,000 that come to $1 million. He said that a light went out in my head. 500 people with $2,000, that is $1 million. I mean, we can raise up. I'm not saying what we're going to do with the money. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying the idea of how much money that is. We could raise $1 million every day. That's okay.
You got to come up with the plan.
Oh no! Hold on.
The plan.
We're not going with the plan. We're just saying how much money that is.
I understand, but to get $2,000 out of my pocket, you got to have a plan.
We'll come up with the plan later. That's one of the first.
No.
People, man.
To get the money out of my pocket, there got to be a plan.
I'm not taking that out of your pocket. I've been putting an idea how much money. I'm not asking you to contribute. Come on, hold on. I'm not asking you to contribute nothing. Just the idea how much money that is. In one day, $1 million a day. Don't worry about the plan and all of that. Just get the thought of how much money that is. Thank you for taking my comment, man, Alan.
Don't get mad with me, brother.
I'm not mad with you.
We need to have a plan, brother. I know how to come up with $100 million.
No, come. See, that's what we're talking about. That's what we run into the problem. How many of us have even thought about that?
Probably a lot.
No, I doubt it. We have heard it before.
Well,
I'm going to keep on preaching it. Keep on preaching it.
No. Come up with the plan, then preach it.
We have the plan. The plan's already there.
Okay. All right, Mom.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, brother. Assalamualaikum. Let's go back to the phone lines and see here. 727-408.
Assalamualaikum.
And we got a couple minutes before the show ends.
Alhamdulillah. Okay. Yeah, Brother Adam, I love the plan that you got for Sister Claire Muhammad School. So praise be to Allah for that plan. I love it, brother. And I pray a lot of us just pick up that article in Muslim Journal and go ahead on and join the Sister Claire Muhammad thank for that Brother Adam and
150.
Yeah, 150.
Let me say for the record, Muhammad was...
I love that plan, brother. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah. Muhammad was one of the first ones to that joined the effort. So I don't want y'all to think I'm always beating up Muhammad. Let's go to the phone lines. 251-404.
251-404. As-salamu alaykum. This is Hasif in Mobile, Alabama. Adam, on the plan, I do have a plan. We have a plan that you could take them 500 people or take that $1 million and you could double it with a lot of security. You know, everything's got risk, but in 5 years. And I do understand what Brother Muhammad is saying is that we got a lot of ventures that's going on out here that need funding. And you can't get funding for it, therefore it dies, and then somebody else picks it up, and then they get rich off of it. For example, African Americans in the gravel business, which we just recently got into in about a year, that's got the potential of about $7 million in income per year with a net of about $2.5 million a year. But like you say, we are so few and far in between that the people that want to invest in it, of course, they are not people who got our best interests. There won't be any progress necessary for us. So they'll see you. So there are plans out here, but I guess we got to get a format from which we can begin to put these ideas or these plans together to offer to people, you know. And then when it comes to investing, they got the law in such a way there that if you don't be careful with it, they'll have you before the SEC there saying you're soliciting all of this kind of stuff. So we do have to watch that.
Brother Henry, on most cases they come up with a prospectus. Right?
Right, uh-huh.
And that's the plan.
Yes. Right, yeah, that's
now,
the plan. Yeah. Right,
don't
exactly.
Tell me we come up with a plan later. No.
I do understand exactly. Well, you got to come up with that. But I think he just expressing the idea that we need to come together, just like we did during CPC. We raised over $1 million there in doing that thing. And I've been in other investments that I've invested $10,000, and we lost it all every penny of it there. But, you know, it wasn't the end of the world. But, you know, we hold ourselves to a different standard. That if you do it and you African American, now you were swindled or taken, or I'll never do that again. And da 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 da. Yeah. We got to change that attitude, and I think that's what Brother Muhammad
is
saying.
No, that's not that, Henry. All I'm saying is this.
I agree with you. We got to have a plan. I do know that part. Yeah.
Rule.
Right. I agree. We got to have something that we invest in.
And that's all I'm talking
about. Yeah, I understand. You know, I understand that part. But the idea of it is, I think, is great, too, that we do need. And we got 500 people that if they invested $2,000 wouldn't change anything in their lives, and it could possibly improve their lives a lot better. Even if they lost the whole $2,000, they wouldn't miss a meal. So I do understand that. But the concept is a good concept, especially for poor people. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam. Thank you very much, Brother Henry. Appreciate that. And we got to get out of the way because the Imam Yusuf Ramadan is coming up next. And his discussion is, dress is a sign of obedience and sophistication. Obedience, sophistication, and civilization. Money Central will return next week at the same time, next Thursday at 8 o'clock a.m.
As-salamu alaykum. This is your brother, Kareem Hamid, inviting you to join in the study group of the lecture of Imam Waris Muhammad Rahimullah Alayhi, broadcast Saturday morning, at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. The first hour, we shall play a lecture or address from Imam Wasuddin Muhammad Rahim al-Alayhi. And in the second hour, we shall open up the telephone line and share with each other the various beneficial points of interest contained in the lecture or address. So join the study group of the lectures of Imam Wasuddin Muhammad Rahim al-Alayhi on the evolution of revolutionary thought and created purpose every Saturday at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time on American Muslim 360. Let's share. Thank you.
Cut into my time every week.
American Muslim 360 is proud to present the Thursday morning edition of A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio with your host, Yusuf Ramadan.
As-salamu alaykum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That is peace be unto you. With God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. We'd like to welcome everyone to New Day for Al-Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition. The number one Islamic radio station in the nation. My name is Yusuf Ramadan. I'll be your host today. And bringing you the program that deals with current events, trending topics, and issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. And as we always say, the Muslim perspective is and always should be the human perspective. So today, we wanted to talk to you about a couple of topics. And that is dress is a sign of obedience, sophistication, and civilization, your dress. And we say that you dress the way you want to be addressed. You dress the way you want to be addressed. We know Allah advises us in the Quran that when we come to the Jummah, we're supposed to be in our best dress. Our best dress. That is our best clothing, looking well. We're supposed to be. We know that that's true. We're talking about that because you're supposed to take the adab of Jummah is to take a ghusl, a complete bath, before you come, and to use some type of oil or perfume that smells good so that you smell good, that you don't smell bad in the ranks. So we don't expect that you put on your dirty clothes or your worst clothes after taking that ghusl, right? No, that doesn't follow the logic, right? That doesn't follow any logic. And we've gotten so that, I heard Elijah Muhammad II, Allah forgive his sins, grant the paradise. I heard him say one time, we used to be dressed. We used to be well-dressed, right? We always had some type of suit on. It might not have been a $3,000 suit, a Canali suit. But we had on a suit, we had on a tie, some type of bow tie or another tie. We looked fresh and clean. We were expected to look that way all the time. And coming to Jummah, Elijah Muhammad II, he said, we become some funny-looking people. We don't care what we wear to Jummah. And we know that the Quran... that the Quran has instructed us. Yes, the Quran has instructed us on what to do, how to dress. It talks about our parents, referred to as Adam and Eve, becoming aware of their nakedness. it says to the prophet, and by way of telling it to him, is saying to us, it says, tell your wives and your daughters to cover themselves, with the, and there's some type of misunderstanding between kimar, right? The Quran used the word kimar, but the popular usage, which we're not arguing with the popular usage, is hijab. They refer to all the sisters, the hijabis. No, the hijab, as I've heard Imam Wahdi Muhammad, Rahimahullah Alayh, and other scholars speak about the hijab. The hijab is really a curtain. And it says, talk to the wives of the prophet from behind a curtain. In other words, you're not looking directly at them. And the imam went on to say, and it's in the, it wasn't just in the Middle East, but in some of these little flats that we had, these poor homes that we lived in, that's why they call them flats, walk-ups, no elevator, shotgun houses, they call them. You shoot through the front door and go right out through the back door. There was no separation between the rooms. Huh? No separation between the rooms. And so they would hang up beads. Sometimes they would use beads as a curtain so that you could have some privacy to dress and undress in the household with more than one person. You know? That's hijab. That's what hijab means. It means a curtain, something that you, you know. And so also with kimar, it's not just the headscarf, but it's to cover the chest, the breast of the women. Yes, it's to cover them. And Allah says that you be known and not molested. The Quran tells us, O children of Adam, let not Shaitan tempt you as you removed your parents from paradise, stripping them of their clothing to show them their private parts. Indeed, he sees you, he and his tribe, from where you do not see them. Indeed, we have made the devils allies of those who do not believe. So, you know, they have a big controversy going on now about the wife of Russell the football player and married to his sister who was a singer, a rapper, whatever, Sierra, and how she came to the Oscars in something that you would consider lingerie, bedroom attire. Now, this is not a gossip show. We don't get into gossip, but it's become an item in social media. Why are you trying to police women? You should be minding your own business. How is that your business? She made it my business because she showed it to me. That's your business. They refer to that as your business. Cover up your business, your private parts. We know what the private parts are. Don't we teach our children and grandchildren that? Don't let anybody touch your private parts. You don't go around showing your private parts. Even my little six-year-old grandson learned. We had to potty train him. So his potty wasn't always, he didn't go in the bathroom and close the door. Now he'll ask for privacy. He gets that from his mother taught him that. May I have some privacy? The concept of privacy. Then he'll ask for privacy. Everybody wants some privacy. That's not considered civilized. But, you know, the older folks, they had that concept. If you go in these gyms, men gyms, women's gyms, what do they want to have, co-ed gyms now? I'm sure they do. They do have co-ed gyms. But the locker rooms are segregated. Men locker room, they said, here's the men's locker room. Here's the women's locker room. But even in the locker room, you'll see men walking around, come out the shower, buck naked, showing everything. No shame. Oh, there's nothing but men in here. You think that's your protection? Not in this day and time. Not in this day and time, buddy. So the point is, and I'm not telling you to go look at it, but I'm saying the outfit that she had on left nothing to the imagination. Virtually nothing to the imagination. You could take a pen, a pencil, and draw her physique just the same way as if she was buck naked. Yeah. And we know where they have it in so-called art, don't they? They call it nude portraits. And the person will be in a class and come there and pose in front of the whole class, buck naked. And the students will draw that person, male and female, male or female, sometime together. What happened to your modesty? They don't believe in modesty, and they will ridicule modesty. So you can't talk to everybody because they have a logic, like the imam said. The imam told us to take the logic to its conclusion, correct? And the imam said certain places like San Francisco, you know what they're famous for, and now Atlanta for black people. That's the black capital of the gay, so-called gay community, LGBTQ plus. Plus what? It'll let you know. And so what's acceptable behavior or what is acceptable behavior? And President Biden, he told a damn lie the other day. He claimed that in the 1960s, and we know how conservative he was back then. We have video of it. It's quote unquote conservative. He claimed that he saw two men, him and his father, saw two men kissing each other in public. Now, you know they wouldn't do that in public, not that they wasn't doing it. Now, is it virtually, it's not impossible that that happened. But he said that he was shocked. And his father said to him, it's not hard to understand. They're in love. They're in love. Now, you know that didn't happen. Some of y'all hate Trump so bad. That it might have happened, brother. You know it didn't happen. He know it didn't happen. And the place that he claimed he was being dropped off, the topography is saying it didn't happen. He claimed where he was when it happened, his father was dropping him off for school, is 7.5 miles away from his school. That's where he was being dropped off at. So the world has been turned on its head, the thinking has been turned on his head, okay? So we know that some of the arguments, they say, oh, you want the Muslim women to be identifiable so that they not be molested. And these nuts will molest them whether they're covered up or not. But human nature doesn't work that way. Even your wife, if you're at home, if your wife is in something, what do they call it, revealable, in revealing clothing. Maybe she's just walking around or going to the, you know, we're told how to conduct ourselves in the Quran, in the household when there's other people. And she not to show her beauty, which is her hair or her body, to you, to no one except her husband. She's not to show her hair, which is part of the women's beauty. And we know that because how they advertise that. Well, it's just hair. People are going to be turned on by anything. But we know that they give you commercials. Oh, this is going to make your hair sexy, don't they? Shimmering, shiny, sexy hair. Then when they want to make their argument, they'll say what? Well, it's just hair. Everybody got hair. Now you can't show your hair. So you know when, you don't know when your wife wants to be romantic with you by the way she dressed. And if you look at women in the street, what they call ladies of the evening, prostitutes, Don't they dress scantily? Aren't they scantily clad? Yes. So what is, look, it's no sense in arguing with these people, brothers and sisters, because they're going to, and then they're going to tell you, you can dress any way you want to dress. You grown. You do, she do anything she want to do. And the argument was stupid. Don't you know that was the theme? The theme, if they have a theme, and the theme is satanic rituals, you think I'm going? I wouldn't go to something that, if that was true, and that was the theme, that don't have to be the theme. We know they come to them award shows buck naked. That's what they do. That's their practice. So you can't argue with these people. You know, so you wasted your time. You're having a circular discussion, going round and round and round. That's not what they're interested in. That's not what they're interested in. They're not interested in obeying Allah. That's not their interest. Not in that area. Not in no area. You wasting your time. Even you just trying to appeal to good common sense. You know, we didn't allow any man that would go out in public like that, I have to question his speaking. And he claims to be a Christian, a practicing Christian. So if Christianity didn't allow, if we saw a woman dressed like that in the streets, in public, no one thought, oh, she's a church woman. And you hear, you can do both. You can do both. That's the argument that they have. You can't get through to them people. You can't get through to those people. And I've told you all this story before. Dave Chappelle, arguably the most talented comedian alive today and a Muslim, he told a story of him seeing a woman scantily dressed in public. And he thought she was a prostitute. And she said to him, he said, and you ladies say, just because I look like a prostitute don't mean that I am one. He said, and that's right. That's right. But I got to tell you ladies, it's confusing as hell. He said, that's like me walking down the street with a police uniform on. And you say, quick, they're sticking up the bank down the street, hurry up. And you say, just because I look like a policeman, it don't mean I am one. So they want to take you to law school arguments. They want to argue back and forth, back and forth. They're never going to come to good sense. They don't want that. And their thing is today, if you don't tell a grown woman she can wear whatever she wants. No, she cannot. They used to have laws against indecency. They used to have a vice squad. Now, I don't say they wasn't corrupt. A lot of them were corrupt. But if you see a woman walking down the street like that, you don't think that's sending a message? Or she's dressing for herself. Then stay in the house. She's just dressing for her husband. Then all her husbands can stay in the house. She's not allowed to be sexy. Be sexy at home. Huh? No good? The fact that that's an argument tells you where we at in today's world. You listen to New Day Father Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. We have some important announcements for you, so don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Manira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dabrita Hadi, Director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
Families, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
We're back. And you know those same people, those exact same people that argue that women, men should control themselves. Men should control themselves. I don't care if she's butt naked. She should be able to walk around like that, and you're supposed to be in control of yourself, brother. Huh? That's not supposed to, human nature is not designed that way. Why do you think those women who are streetwalkers are dressed scantily? The terminology they use, they're trying to catch. They're trying to catch a victim. They're trying to catch a customer, catch your attention, right? Yeah, they want your attention. Now, if you want my attention and you're somebody's, well, why do you want my attention on your body? Oh, because she looks good. What's your point? If I look that way, bro, here's the women talking. And I have to tell you the truth. Well, I don't have to tell you. You already know. What segment of the female population is talking like that? I don't have to tell you. You already know. If I looked that good, I'd be that way too. If you got it, flaunt it. It's disrespectful to yourself, sisters. It's disrespectful to your husband. It's disrespectful to your children. And you hear their arguments. You can't tell me what to wear. What you mean, allow me to wear? I'm a grown woman. You ain't my father. They don't really mean that. Because if their father was to tell them, I don't think it's appropriate for you to go out like that. You know, I don't have to tell you what the answer would be. I'm a grown blank woman. So that means their husband can't tell them. Their father can't tell them. I saw a woman, a girl who was an actress. She was an actress, a popular actress, grew up. She's still not as popular as she was, but she had on, looked like a bathing suit with some boots on. And she said to her son, now her son must have been, he couldn't have been no more 10, maybe 11 years old. You like my outfit? He said, no. If you care about her, you don't want to see her parading herself like that in public. He said, no. She said, well, it's what I would wear at the beach. He said, then why you got high boots on like that? So the son and her father was there, and her father told her. They both did. For her to ask a question like that, she already knew the answer. There's something wrong with us mentally. And the men, some of them, condoning it by coming out and posing with their wife like that. Oh, yeah, I like it. You hear the men are messed up, too. Oh, I like it when other men are looking at my wife. Yeah, they wish they were me. Is that what they wish? Where did we go wrong, brothers and sisters? But we can't be like them because they turned this thing into Sodom and Gomorrah. Oh, you can't waste your time in trying to argue with me on social media. I have to cut it off because you're not going to make any headway. You're not going to say anything that means something to them. They've even infected the Muslim world thinking. They've even infected the Muslim world thinking. Now I'm looking at this sister here, you know, a sister who I like is on the television looking ridiculous. And that's all she ever wears. She got a big gold cross around her neck and a big platinum blonde wig. I mean, even whiter wig than what Marilyn Monroe used to wear. Huh? And the imam spoke on that. So y'all know I know the imam's language. The imam spoke on Marilyn Monroe and the image that she preserved. She came out with that so-called sexy persona back in the 50s. Huh? I'm looking at Mary J. Blige now. She looks so, I like her as an artist. She looks pitiful. Pitiful. I can't even think of some of the, they used to call them dumb blondes in Hollywood, sex kittens and everything that they try to portray them. Huh? And the imam talked about the persona of Marilyn Monroe, that she's the B word. Why? Because the B word is the female dog. See, y'all wouldn't accept this from me, but when I tell you the imam said it, now you have to accept it, or you got to pretend to accept it. But you don't really accept it. I'm telling you what the imam said. The B word is a female canine. And when she's in heat, all the dogs, the male dogs from the neighborhood, can smell her from miles around, and here they come. And she mates with any of them. She has no loyalty to the family. That's why our women, there was a time when back in that time, our women, if you call them the B word, brother, you better be ready to fight. You couldn't say that to your wife. Who are you talking to? I know you can't be talking to me. Now they willingly accept that word. I'm a bad B. They willingly accept. They were showing on TV the other day, a little girl saying it. I'm talking about a toddler. A toddler. But she thought she was saying witch when she had heard them saying the B word so much. She said, he said, are you a good witch or a bad witch? She said, I'm a bad B. Oh, they fell. Oh, that was so funny. I'm talking about a toddler that just learned how to talk. These people are sick. These people are sick. And you trying to talk sense to these kind of people, you are wasting your time. Now, the other thing that I wanted, this is why, oh, that's what I'm saying. Those same people that fight for women to walk around naked, and this is what Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, in the last days, people would be dressed, calling themselves dressed, but they would be naked. They would be naked. And if you look, and their argument was for Sierra, they showed pictures of other white women that was half naked too. I don't hear you saying nothing about them. And you know who was saying, do I have to tell you what segment of defending her like that, who her lawyers were that came to her aid? No, I do not, because you know who they are. And if I tell you who they are, you're going to say, oh, you're being divisive, brother. You know who they are without me telling you, don't you? So, I mean, this is the type of, oh, those same people, they want to take our sisters to task for wearing a kimah. Oh, you come from a patriarchal, male-dominated society. They're making you wear that? That's a male-oriented, dominated religion. You have to cover your hair. You got to cover yourself up. Huh? Why shouldn't you? And look at them in the church now with mini skirts on, sitting up in the front row. And the dress is so short, you can see their birth certificate. And look what's going on in the church. But those churches are black churches, are dominated by you know who, financially supporting them, showing up, giving them moral support. And they got that corrupt pastor up there. Yeah. Pimping. That's what they're doing, pimping pastors. Not all of them, but too many of them. Too many. They accept anything. They want anybody to come in there. And I remember I'm talking about Juma. You're not supposed to come to Juma with any, you don't have a shirt with no writing on it. Not supposed to be no writing on it. Messages, T-shirts and stuff, all kind of T-shirts. And a brother came into the masjid one time, right up there on 116th Street, Masjid Malcolm Shabazz, and he had on something, say, a B word ain't nothing but on his shirt. I said, brother, it's a shirt, brother. Anybody, what? Ain't no big deal. See, we want to make excuses. We'll make excuses till we don't have nothing left. And the sister was standing right there in front of the masjid with her micro mini dress on, African sister. And the brother said, oh, she's a Muslim. I said, man, go ahead, man. What? Watch this. Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum aslam. In front of the masjid. No shame in the game. And I told you I worked on a picture. I worked on a movie in Los Angeles. Well, it was in New York, too, but then it went to Los Angeles. What was the name of the movie? Oh man, it's escaping me right now. With Wesley Snipes. Wow, my mind is really going. The sister had on a micro mini dress with high heels on, and me and the brother walked by. African sister. And when we walked by her, she said, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Not Assalamu alaikum. Not Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We turned around. We looked past her. Who the hell said that? That was her. We knew it wasn't her. It could, definitely couldn't have been her. And, you know, my brother, he's not that tactful. He said, you a Muslim? He said, oh, my grandfather, big sheikh over in Africa. And he said to her, what the hell happened to you? She said, oh, I'm trying to get this movie. I'm trying to get in this movie. Needless to say, she wasn't in it. If she was, she might have been one of them, I don't know, she was an extra or something like that. They had a bunch of extras. She wasn't in the movie. So she's willing to sacrifice, and people will argue with me saying this Sierra's husband makes $40 million a year, Russell Wilson, $40 million a year. You know what he said? The hustle never stops. You got to keep doing things to make money. That's what you got to do to make money? Huh? People are sick. People are sick. So you can't argue with these people. There's no win for you. You gotta talk to people. They need building blocks. Their building blocks of knowledge base is not there. They're gone. They are gone. Well, you listen to New Day Father Psalm in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. We have some important announcements for you, so don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while. When we come back, we're going to talk about the economy, and the banking crisis.
The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Omar Shakir, and I'm resident imam of Masjid Bilal Ibn Rabah in San Antonio, Texas. And I would like to invite you every first Sunday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time to join us for our class where we're dealing with the subject matter of the basics in Islam. We are excited about this program, even if we're new Muslims or Muslims that have been in the faith for many, many years. It is a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand this beautiful way of life. We also connected with various insights from the tafsir of Imam Waliduddin Muhammad radiallahu anhu, and we all explain its practical application. We look forward to being with you on every first Sunday of the month, where we would deal with the basics of Islam. The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Join us each and every Sunday from 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time and 4 to 6 Central Standard Time for the broadcast of the contemplations of Imam Waliduddin Muhammad, sharing his insights, his wisdom, and his knowledge here on America Muslim 360, utilizing the books edited by Brother Morocco, Brother Ghani, and Brother Ronald B. Shaheed. So we look forward to your presence as we share the insight, the logic, and the thinking of our beloved Imam Waliduddin Muhammad here on America Muslim 360 on a myriad of subject matter. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah. Very good programming. Yeah, so now we saw that we had the, recently, we had the collapse of the bank failure of the SVB Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, which was the second largest bank failure in the country. Didn't say the second largest bank. The people get that mixed up. The second largest bank failure, okay, followed quickly by Signature Bank. Now, the international bank, European bank, Credit Suisse, they're facing problems. What's going on? We need to try to understand what's going on. You know, they told you when they saw problems with the cryptocurrency, good for y'all. I told you that thing wasn't good. Now what they got to say? What they got to say now? That's not crypto. That's fiat currency. We want to understand. We want to understand a little bit insight, get a little insight into what's going on. And this is Professor Richard Wolf on the collapsing banks.
Okay, well, the first thing to say is that you're absolutely right. It is not all that complicated. Most of the complicated noise you hear from the executives and the regulators is precisely designed to make you turn away from paying much attention because they've rendered it so complicated that no sane person would follow it. I also want to tell you from personal experience that the people who run our banks are, as my cousin used to say, not the sharpest knives in the drawer. So take with a grain of salt what they're saying. Let me give you an example. March 11th, The Intercept, it's a very well-known podcaster on the thing, they quote the president of Silicon Valley Bank, a man named Greg Becker, giving testimony to Congress in which he requests what was eventually done, a relaxing of the post-2008 reforms, the Dodd-Frank bill and those things. He's asking for that to be taken off of his bank, and he ends his argument, and I'm quoting now, just to give you an idea. Given the low-risk profile of our activities, that's the man telling the Congress how low risk his business is, and that low risk collapsed the bank last weekend. Here's what a bank does. Very simple. Commercial banks take in deposits from businesses and from individuals. They give you, as you're sure you've noticed, next to nothing for that deposit. You're supposed to be grateful that they're holding it for you, that it's safe, and that you get a monthly document telling you what's been happening to it. That costs them next to nothing. They then take your deposit, your money, and lend it out wherever they can get the highest rate of return, to a corporate borrower, to an individual to use as their credit card backup, and so on. In other words, the bank lives off the difference between what it pays you for your money,
nothing,
very little, and what it gets by lending your money out, which can be significant. One of the most important investments banks make is they buy government bonds. In other words, they take the deposit you put in and they lend it to the United States government. A little aside, if you do that yourself, you can make the difference rather than the bank. It's called getting rid of the middleman. Just don't tell the banker where you heard it, okay? Everything I'm telling you is completely legal and normal. Here's what Silicon Valley Bank did. It took in deposits, and it made loans to local startups, and it bought government bonds. And that's what it did, and it made a lot of money for a bunch of years doing that. Then, starting, as you all know, especially those of you in California, starting some months ago, high-tech encountered difficulties. It laid off hundreds of thousands of its workers in Silicon Valley particularly, but all over. Of course, if the bank cuts, if the high-tech company cuts back its operations, it puts less deposits in the bank. It doesn't need them for the business that's now reduced. Likewise, the individuals who lost their jobs couldn't not make their mortgage payments the way they used to. They didn't have money to put in a deposit in the bank. They were scurrying around, maybe finding a job somewhere else. Their deposits began to shrink. Well, you know, there's a problem. If people want their deposits out and new ones aren't coming in, the only place you can go, really, to give the depositors their money back is to go to the bonds that you've purchased and sell them and get the money and give it to your depositor. Just reverse the normal process. Here's the problem. The bonds have a price. When you lend to the government, you get a piece of paper or electronically. You've lent the government $1 million. We'll pay you back in 2 years and 6 months, and we'll give you this interest every year. That's how it works. If the interest rates go up, the price of the bond goes down. If you want, I can explain that later. It's just an arithmetic, the way it works. Since the interest rates went up dramatically over the last 8 months, in order why? To fight the inflation that really troubles the American economy, the Federal Reserve decided to raise interest rates. Well, here's what happens, and it's like a human being. If you're not careful, the solution to one problem gives you a bigger problem because of the solution. That's what's happening here. The bonds went down, so the bank didn't have the wherewithal,
right,
to meet the demands of the depositors who wanted their money back. Then it made a fatal mistake because they're not the sharpest knives in the drawer. The bank went out into the market and said, we need more money. We need more capital. Here, here's a bunch of shares. What that did, which they should have known, was to confirm in a relatively small number of people who pay folks like me to keep them abreast of what's going on, they said, oh, my God, it's worse than we thought. And that began get your money out.
Right.
Because they, the bulk of the deposits there, were not insured. So they didn't have the FDIC, the government saying, we will insure. Businesses can't do that the way individuals can. So the businesses began to withdraw, then the and then the bank collapsed. It did not have enough money in its investments to cover the deposits. It had badly messed up so-called fiduciary duty. It hadn't managed properly, safely, the money the depositors gave them. That's the classic reason why banks fail, because they haven't done that well. Here's the thing that people have to kind of face, hard as it is. Money is what lubricates a capitalist economy. You know, money is what we're paid. Money is what we spend to feed ourselves, to clothe ourselves. Money makes the capitalist world go around. And so we all depend on the money system. But what we allow is an enormous influence on the money system is operated by private banks. If you talk to those bankers, they will tell you, and this is honest, We're in business to make money. We're in business to make a profit. That's what, if we make a profit, we move up the chain, we get more respect, we get more money, and if we don't make a big profit, we are disreputable. Okay, we've now arranged for a system that we all depend on, that our society and our economy depend on, but we've placed it in the hands of the people who do not do business according to what the society needs, according to what we as a people need. They're busy making money for their bank.
The business of American business is business, okay? So we have a few minutes left, and we'll take your calls, your questions, and your comments. Press 1 on your phone. I see 724 and 866 is still there from the last show. 25144 is still there from the last show. Okay, 914-434. State your name and where you're calling from, please. 914-434.
Assalamu alaikum. This is 972, Ishmael family.
Oh, alaikum salam. Okay, I got you.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm pretty good. Praise be to Allah. If I said anything different, I'd be lying.
Yeah, that presentation about the collapse is that was good. I just wanted to add to that. You know, with that deregulation of banks, it allowed these local banks to kind of have more leeway in what they say is giving money to the community. So in Silicon Valley, a lot of those startups and venture capitalists, you know, in big tech, they were able to get a lot of money without going through all of the red tape. So what they were doing, so, is that they were giving money to some of these startups based on what they're going to do in the future, like their next big thing. So they thought they were putting that money in something secure, like a mortgage bond portfolio, but with the interest rate going up, they end up losing like 50% of their investment. That's normally secure in most cases. So, in effect, they needed $2 billion, you know, in order to keep the flow of money going through. So some of these big tech people, you know, they got this social media following. And it's called a digital run where they came on complaining about it. And as a result, people started taking their money out of the bank. So they say it was, I think, over $45 billion removed in 48 hours. So between the inflation, the interest rate going up, and that digital run through media, that was another thing that caused it. So it was... With deregulation is good in some cases, and then in some cases, you know, you take a risk. So I'm not necessarily saying what they did was bad, but they took a risk and it backfired on them. And a lot of times people say that, you know, they're protecting the rich, which they are, but also they're also protecting the working man too, because they had employees, and a lot of them said they needed that money to make payroll and to prevent operational efficiency, which is layoffs, things of that nature. So it's a combination of things. I'm enjoying the program. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Yes. Okay. 914-434. State your name. Where you calling from?
Yeah, this is Muhammad Sharif calling out from New York. Assalamu alaikum, ma'am Yusuf.
Walaikum assalam, Sharif. What's happening, man? That's my business partner.
Right. Guess I won't waste the time, but thank you for playing that segment there by Wolf.
Yes.
So I'll just go right into what I've been saying is what we heard on the program, say it's Mouse Chaos. Today, Sunday, there's this 500 people with $2,000. That's $1 million. Just that simple. And we're not talking about what we're going to do with it, nothing like that. We're just putting the thought out there, let people know that that's what's in our fingertips, right at our fingertips. The people with $2,000, that's $1 million. We can do that, raise $1 million every 30 minutes or so. We're not saying anything about what we're going to do with it, what we lost in the past. It's just to put the idea that that's what our fingertips. Thank you for taking my comment, Imam Yusuf.
Thank you for what you do, brother. Alhamdulillah. Yes. All right. So anyone else? We only got a few minutes left. Press 1 on your phone. We bring you into the queue so you can ask your question or make a comment. The FDIC, which is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, they only insure up to $250,000, which is no money. That's no money. So if you got more than $250,000, they won't give it to you. Now, in this case, the president intervened because the whole banking system is at risk. So he told them he was going to make everybody whole regardless as to how much money they had. And as the brother was just saying, a lot of these companies had their money in there to make their payroll. So if they can't pay the people that work for them, the people that work for them can't pay their bills, can't pay their mortgage, can't pay their insurance, can't pay their children's tuition. It has a ripple effect on the whole economy. So Biden stepped in right away. Then Signature Bank went under. Okay, much smaller bank, but they went under. Now Credit Suisse is having a problem, which is a European bank, okay? So this story is not over. Their job, which they're supposed to do, is to make people feel comfortable and not panic, et cetera. But the reality is if the people were to go to the bank and everybody would try to withdraw their money, the bank doesn't have the money. The bank does not have the money. You thinking that these banks are not secure and conservative like that? No, they lend them deposits out. And then they have what they call a fractional banking where they can lend up to 9 times the amount of money that they have. How does that work? We'll do some future programs, inshallah, on that. Yes, that's very important. So how in the world can you lend more money than you have? It's a miracle. They call it a miracle, but it's not a miracle at all. It's just they're playing with the numbers. So while y'all were saying crypto is nothing but a scam, okay, well, you show me where there is no scam. Where's you telling me now these people are loaning your money out like that? Brother, they can't make them people whole. You know, they don't have the money to pay everybody. In other words, when you had money that was backed by gold, each one of those dollars had money backing it up, had a certain amount of gold backing it up. Then we came off the gold standard. We have fiat currency. The only thing that's backing up that currency is the reputation of the United States government, how strong they are. So we have a relatively strong government, although it's getting weak with all of this fighting and back and forth between the White House, the Congress. Well, they do come together when it comes to the money interests. They will fight to help the people with financial power stay in power. So we got probably enough time for one other call if you'd like to chime in on this and give your perspective. They were talking about Lehman Brothers. I had done some work, not much, but I had done some work for Lehman Brothers. They never paid me. I did some security work for Lehman Brothers. They never paid me. Okay? And actually, I was working for a company that was working for them, and they told me to take care of Lehman Brothers, and that company, Lehman Brothers, didn't pay them. So when that company didn't pay them, they didn't pay me. When Lehman didn't pay the company that I was subcontracting with, you see the ripple effect? And he thought he was making me feel better. He said to me, oh, there's blood in the water for everybody. There's enough blood to go around. That ain't making me feel better. My father used to always say, misery loves company. Your misery don't make me, I'm not comfortable because we both miserable. That ain't helping me because you and I are both miserable together. Misery loves company. So they never paid me. And Lehman Brothers, they let them go. So you should see that film, Wall Street, when they let Lehman Brothers go under. And they were saying, oh, you're just going to let them go under. So they pick and choose which companies they're going to bat, which companies they're going to. Now they're letting other big companies as vultures, they're flying around looking at SVB Bank and decide, well, maybe we can, you know, maybe we'll come in and take over the bank at pennies on a dollar. That's the nature of capitalism. Now, we're Muslims. We're not against capitalism. We're not communists. We're not socialists. 724-866. Real quick.
Assalamu alaikum. I just was thinking, too, how the money, the fashion drives a lot of the money and investments all the way down to the bottom line consumer. But would you also bring out that the suits and stuff and the pants that the brothers wear that are the athletes, it makes them look like Pee Wee Herman, and we know what the society did to Pee Wee Herman. Those tight pants and the little jackets, it looks like they're ready to bust out like Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the pants were a little too bulky. You don't want to look like the Steve Harvey collection. Steve Harvey don't even dress like that no more, but you make
right.
a good point. Please call back. We're at the end of the show, and we thank everybody for listening. You're listening to New Day for Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. We pray Allah that you enjoy a Jumu Mubarak. By the time we talk to you next week, we will be into Ramadan. So let me be the first one. Let's see, what today is the 16th, right? So they're looking at the 23rd. They're going to be looking for the moon, the 22nd, 21st. We don't think we'll be able to see it then. We doubt if we'll be able to see it then. But the 23rd, yeah, next Thursday, we'll probably be starting fasting. But, you know, it is either 29 or 30 days in the month of Ramadan, in every month. And so if it's not the 29th of Shaban, it'll be the 30th, which means we have to start fasting. So Ramadan Mubarak. And until next time, assalamu alaikum.